Welcome to the Ross Republic podcast. My name is Adrian. I'm partner at Ross Republic. And in this episode, we're going to talk about banking as a service and also embedded finance, and also how we define these terms and why this trend is important for large banking groups, why it should be strategically put on the map, and especially what kind of strategies are available to banks in navigating this space. And I'm also super happy that we're joined by Divya Derova. She's the area lead for banking as a service at Rabobank. So first of all, thanks for joining, and how are you doing?
Well, thank you for the invitation. Happy to be here. I'm doing well, thanks. How are you?
I'm also doing really well. I'm also excited about what you have to, about your insights, and to listen what you're up to at Rabobank, because our company is based in Amsterdam, so we know a little bit the banking environment, and of course Rabobank everyone knows in the Dutch and Benelux markets. But for the listeners that might not have looked too much into Rabobank, it's a banking group, a cooperative bank that is active in over 30 countries, mostly also well-known and very focused on food and agriculture sector, over a trillion loans outstanding in these sectors, and definitely in its home market, obviously Netherlands, Rabobank serves more than 9 million clients. So definitely a household name. So that's why I'm also excited to hear also directly from you how you see banking as a service evolving. Yeah, as such an established bank. And from my research, what I could dig up at least, as an area lead for banking as a service, you're building the platform for Rabobank's embedded services, driving the change within the bank to bring financial services where your customers need and want them. And I think that's kind of also really the core of banking as a service. So maybe just to start, it would be really interesting to hear your responsibilities, like what you do as area lead for banking as a service, and maybe a little bit on the journey, how you ended up there as the area lead. Like, how long did it take until that became an actual own area with like own FTEs, and that journey a little bit would be really interesting to hear.
Happy to share more about that. So I'm indeed the area lead of banking as a service within Rabobank, which means that I'm responsible for building and maintaining the platform for embedded services, so the distribution of our APIs to external parties. And next to that, I'm driving the needed change to basically fill our nice shop with relevant products. That's a second responsibility. How did we end up here? Well, it's actually funny because I started at Rabobank exactly 5 years ago as a digital strategy consultant. And one of my first projects was related to developing the vision on banking as a service within Rabobank. And that point in time, banking as a platform was a super hot topic. Dutch people might recall this, but Ralph Hamers, the CEO of ING at that time, really shared in the market that ING was becoming a platform company. Well, I came from ING and I knew that ING didn't realize yet what that actually meant. However, they said that in the market. And at Rabobank, they were also discovering, like, what should we do with the platformization of the economy? What does that mean for us as a bank? So we developed the banking as a platform strategy first, and then with a couple of colleagues, we were thinking that we should also do something with banking as a service, the other side of the coin, basically. And that was 5 years ago. And since then, we have been on quite a journey, actually, to really make this a topic within the bank. But I can now say that it is adopted, and that and that people do see the importance of it.
Yeah, it's super interesting because I think it is somewhat, it needs definitely resources. So it's not something that you can easily do as an MVP and it's in a product stance. It needs resources, it needs infrastructure. It's also somewhat a little bit not in the core business in that sense that it's like it's more like a near core innovation. It needs some time to really show that this can get traction and you actually make revenues with that. So it's like, it needs a lot of space to grow, I think, and to get it right, which always in most banks means you need to have proper sponsorship behind it, so that it has enough time to prove that it's valuable for the bank as well. But let's cover that in a minute. And I would say in this episode, it would be really interesting to just dive into the current state of banking as a service, because there has been a long period now where we had also many fintechs popping up in Germany, for example, we have Solaris Bank, which is now already at, I think, a very advanced funding stage. So it's not a startup anymore, but there are some very specialized players now in providing these banking as a service services, and also obviously the large banking groups. And after that, I would use the most of the time to see how you think about it and how you enter that market, because I think still one of the biggest benefits, obviously, for large banking groups is that they have a lot of customers, they have a lot of data that you can potentially use, and especially for banking as a service, depending on how you're bringing this to market, you already mentioned APIs. Most large banks already have, for example, large customers in wholesale, for example, that might be interested in using this. So I think there are many advantages actually for a bank to get a head start in this whole environment. But if you maybe start just with definitions, and you said you developed a vision, and there's so many hyped, let's say, buzzwords, but in the end, I don't think it even matters how you call it, but how do you define banking as a service generally? Like, why is it important, and maybe how do you define it in the first place?
Good question, because in my title it says banking as a service, but what I do define as banking as a service is really offering almost a bank in a box to another company, and that other company can use then banking capabilities to serve his or her customers. Most of the time that's even white label, and that's actually not something that Rabobank is doing. So we internally now, and also in our proposition, we call it embedded finance. And with that, I mean is bringing our products and services, integrate those in customer journeys at relevant points in time. Currently, that's almost all Rabobank branded. So we do not offer white label products at this point in time. There are other examples in the market who do offer that, but that's not our strategy.
And it's only in the Netherlands, probably?
Yes, currently, yes. So focused on the retail market, both consumers as well as businesses.
Yeah. Cool. And we're talking about, because as a regulated institution, you already have PSD2 APIs, so that's already accounts that your customers have, and they can bring that through third parties to other places, basically, but it's already something that they already went to Rabobank and opened their account or used that to make payments. And I think because it's an interesting journey with the whole open finance development, that maybe was the first push into this whole world, that customers understood, well, wait a minute, I don't need to keep my banking tab open in my computer. I can also actually do this on some other interface that I'm already using more often. But when you say embedded finance, these are actually accounts for, as an example, that someone would open up. Yeah, in that sense, almost as a new to bank, or just like someone that gets another account inside some other brand that would decide to use an additional banking product in their own customer journeys, right? So it's kind of like a new product on top of what other products that might be already using.
Yeah, it can be. So I think there are multiple options. Indeed, it all started for us as bank with PSD2, although we already had bookkeeping connections. But PSD2, you're saying, well, customers got used to what it actually means to use a banking service at another platform. But it also helped within Rabobank to understand what is this actually, what can this offer. The start was becoming compliant with PSD2 regulation, and that's the start of BaaS within the Rabobank. However, indeed, it can be that you find new type of customers or new customers, new to the bank customers at a different place because of offering embedded services, but you also offer usage of products. So for example, enabling doing payments, that's another part. Or you can say, well, we offer our capabilities, like for example, identity services, within a customer journey, and thereby we help our partners or corporates to optimize their customer journeys. And then the end user doesn't even realize that they use a product of us. So there are multiple categories.
Yeah, fully agree. And I think it makes a lot of sense if you actually, as a starting point, are such an established brand. Why not, like, why would you white label it almost? I think there's a lot of research also that really shows people are thinking it's a scam if you're actually doing really serious banking or going through a banking customer journey and you're not really sure who's providing it and you're dealing with passwords and, you know, customer authentication and so on. It can sometimes really help in the conversion to show that there's a well-known banking brand behind this. I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think there are two learnings for us, at least concerning white label. That's first of all that many partners or many companies that want to partner with us really value our brand name because we're a trusted brand in the Netherlands. So that's one. And secondly, the use cases that you see for which white label makes sense, for example, white label cards, are relatively small for a large bank like us, and therefore don't really make sense to go after. So that's for us a second learning. I think those white label options are for other type of players within the market.
And I guess you have spent a lot of time on like figuring out what trends push embedded finance further, and in preparation for this podcast, I mean, we usually also look at some data points from outside, and I think obviously we already mentioned open finance, that's one push. So the whole topic of APIs and how to handle them and manage them as a regulated institution, that's I guess one big push that has happened for banks to actually think about taking a little bit more steps into that direction. But also I think from a consumer perspective, as you also said, also actually through open banking, there is a little bit more awareness that you can use banking products also in other interfaces. Is there anything else that you have really used to like make the case for this whole banking as a service trend? Is there anything that was particularly like a strong argument or?
Well, definitely regulation, as you mentioned, and you see upcoming regulation now, PSD3, PSR, but also FIDA, that's really going to further open the financial sector and driving this transformation. Secondly, indeed, customers do realize, they maybe realize that they can use financial services at other platforms, but I think there's something behind this, and that's that customers want instant services, instant satisfaction. So if you want to listen to a certain song, you go to Spotify, you search for the song and you start listening it. That's the customer expectation, and that's also reflected on the financial sector. So the players who really can answer this need, they are going to be successful, and then that can be a bank for a customer, but it can also be another player. So I think that's crucial, next to, of course, technological developments and new type of competitors answering the customer needs, driven by regulation, driven by technological changes, that really dive into the gaps or the opportunities that banks not necessarily dive into. Big example of this is during the PSD1 regulation, and just before that, actually, already the payments acceptance business, so the Mollys and Adyens of this world, they really jumped into the opportunity of optimizing payments, so making it easier for entrepreneurs to accept payments in the online world, and making it easier for you as consumer to pay in the online world. And that's something that banks were offering, but not in a way that was really satisfying for customers. And I think that trend and that those type of opportunities are arising currently in multiple parts of the financial sector.
Yeah, fully agree. Yeah. And maybe just to ask a question out of curiosity, maybe you didn't have that discussion because you're not really white labeling it, but sometimes there is this question, you know, why we as a bank should offer services in other platforms, like why wouldn't they come to us? We already have accounts, and these kind of arguments. Did that happen on your side too? Did you convince them?
Definitely.
Because I think you need to make the decision that we just said like there is this shift happening in platformication. So you need to ask your question, am I the platform? So everyone should come to my platform and I keep my customers really sticky. But that's of course also a big if question. Or am I okay with, which can be super lucrative of course too, to be more in the background and just handle the infrastructure, but be maybe less concerned about managing directly that client and do that together with my API partners. Was it even a question or?
Yes, definitely. Definitely. And how we look at it, for Rabobank, it's most important. Well, we have a leading position within the Netherlands, and we want to serve our customers in the most optimal way. And for us, that means that we bring our financial services to the platform of choice of our customers. And that can be the Rabobank platform, Rabo Business Banking, or the Rabo app. But it can also be, if a customer prefers to manage his or her finances in a bookkeeping software, to offer our services there. It's up to the choice of the customer. And you can partly influence that by making your platform, your own platform, super relevant. But at the other part, you cannot influence that. What we do see, however, is by offering the relevant products and services at relevant points in time or at relevant platforms, you even improve your customer relationship. Because you're relevant, you're there where you're needed, and it's not that we offer all the services in other platforms yet, so customers come back to our platform, and there we do have the direct interaction still. So I think you have to do it both, specifically if you're a large institution like us.
Yeah, and then the customer can basically decide themselves like how they want to use the banking product, if it's something they only want to do in online banking or only want to do in other places once that's offered there. Yeah,
exactly. And the customer decides, and we have to ensure that we deliver up to the customer expectation. So for us, banking as a service or embedded finance is not necessarily a new revenue stream or just something we also have to do. No, it's about really transforming how you serve your customers in the most optimal way.
Let's maybe then directly jump into your products that you're offering. Is there like a particular product area that you pushed like really strongly? I know that you have a lot of, for example, SME financing offerings there in terms of lending and, you know, splitting up payments into several installments. And then if you, for example, I looked at your embedded finance site, there's also obviously payments, but then also identification. Yeah, maybe can you share a little bit on the journey, how you decided on certain products?
Our opportunity is that we already have a broad range of products and services, not necessarily embedded yet, but as a bank, we have a lot of financial services. And therefore, we would like to be or want to be the one-stop shop for our partners to integrate financial services, starting with payments, of course, and account services. So enabling customers to see their transaction data, potentially in the later stage have insight in their savings or in their investments, but also being able to do payments in batch or single payments and other type of payments. So that's the big starting point.
Just to jump into that, that's like the open banking side of it, right? So that's like existing accounts they already have, or to talk about payments and accounts that they opened like a new account.
It's existing. It's indeed for existing customers. We are exploring how to open it up to new to the bank customers, but indeed for now it's existing customers. And luckily we do have a large market share. So therefore that's this is still a good direction, and we still have a good proposition towards partners because we're serving such a large part of the market. The next to that, indeed, we are exploring initiatives with regards to embedded lending. So, for example, payment-based lending offered at e-commerce platforms or invoice financing. And related to this, also risk model capabilities as a service, so to say. So those are more the innovative solutions that we're developing and testing in the market, which is actually quite cool because this is very close to the core. It's very innovative, and it really helps our partners to make their platforms more relevant.
And in terms of if a partner decides to integrate this, do you have like already very standard ways to monetize this with the partner, or do you kind of like do this on a deal by deal basis? I think that was interesting. I think when we talked to Deutsche Bank, that they are also still figuring things out a little bit in terms of how you monetize APIs. And once you get your first partners on board, there might be various business models to consider. So it's always like a little bit case by case.
Yes, with regards to our embedded lending propositions and products, yes. We're still, we do see the benefits in the cases. However, it's still tailor-made to the partner, so to say, and still validating what's the optimal way to standardize this. With regards to all our payment solutions and all the APIs you see at our developer portal, those are standardized.
It's very interesting. I think obviously the Netherlands is a really confined market where maybe the partners that are available for these banking as a service offerings are not endless. Like you have the big e-commerce or like one big e-commerce platform, and then maybe a few vertical platforms, and also in terms of maybe software It's not hundreds of them, but you really quickly get a list of target companies. But one thing that was really interesting, when you look at like the mostly US market, so the Shopify's of this world, but also B2B software players that are stock listed, you can really see that in their in their financial statements that if you take out all the financial services revenue that they're making, they're actually not profitable. So they basically give their main product, which is the software, for away for free, and monetize now predominantly and really, really profitably than actually the financial services. So I found that really interesting. It essentially means that if you have a good large customer base and you're not a bank, and especially in these what everyone now on what you read in the press obviously talks about, so SaaS companies, B2B services. Why would you not integrate a banking service if you know maybe also from your clients that it could be a pain point to always use different touch points, and you already said yourself, like, why not be directly vertical, like at the point of need? So I think there will be also a market force where you have to integrate banking services just to remain competitive. And I think we see it really interestingly in the Netherlands as well, where most bookkeeping tools start offering accounts and start offering also cards, but I guess especially the lending part, that will be interesting to see that most companies would then actually monetize also through together with their banking partners, because it's just a lucrative opportunity to just grow market share and to remain more useful for your clients.
Yeah, although I'm curious to see who the winners will be in this space. So if you're a small player and you start offering lending, to what extent can you really benefit from it because you're smaller? And I think there might be just a few players that are behind all those small players that will really win, and if they have the market power, so to say. And I'm curious to find out how this will evolve, because for a bank, we have such a huge skill that and we are so good at defining risk modeling that we really can offer the best rates. So once the market will evolve and that we're all used to super smooth online lending journeys, and that's sort of standardized, then it's again up to scale and being at the right place in the right time. Then I hope there will still be enough room for the banks, or I do believe actually, or there will be some big players behind it. And then also curious to see actually what customers will do. So if they are willing to open up a loan anywhere, anytime, or if they still want to go to, well, maybe a bank or your bookkeeping party, which is also your, like, financial support, or that you want to do this anywhere, anytime, and that you don't bother anymore. But I don't have the answers, but just curious.
Yeah, me too. I think that's going to be interesting, because if you're, let's say, a good customer, you will be able to get a loan at your bank, and that's not, yeah, can be a hassle too, of course, in some cases, but it's not maybe such a big pain point than the long tail of the market, which might already have trouble. So I guess there will be many different use cases, and it has to be seen how the market develops. And it's also a question of market size, maybe, because in the UK, many of these players, they actually, for them, it's such a huge market and such a big opportunity that they, like when you mention for a small player and lending, almost it's too small to do only that. But in the UK, the large players, they even do it on their own balance sheet. So it's like, then maybe what you just said about the risk model capabilities, it's more in that respect that they partner with banking providers. But that's, of course, a whole new, I'm not even sure if, I don't think anyone does that in Europe yet, that you have, like, of course there are some like large automotive brands maybe, or, but then it's still a different world. So this whole fully embedded, also especially in lending, is, I think, still evolving. Maybe also for the end of the podcast, do you have like specific target groups that you have identified for yourself? Anything that you can share in terms of pushing this whole banking as a service and embedded finance market further? I know that everyone looks into marketplaces and software, for example, but I think there are also many opportunities, for example, with the large retail groups, or even maybe even automotives, or for you, maybe even in the agricultural space. Is there anything that you have identified, or maybe even demand that clients came to you and told you, hey, I saw your embedded finance unit, let's work together. Are there some specific groups that you see where the demand is the biggest right now, or is it still evolving?
One group of partners stands out, and that are, of course, bookkeeping parties. So we collaborate intensively with them. For us, it's most important that, well, we used to be in the main street of the town, and we're still there, luckily, but not as present as we used to be. And for us, it's the key to find out where are our customers in the digital space. And I think we can say safely that those are at e-commerce platforms, but also other large corporates or financial institutions or insurance parties. For our identity services, this is a very important group. Besides that, we're also exploring how to be as close to our customers as possible, and where do you then have to be.
Once you work together with a client in terms of integrating this, let's say, a payment capability or the account, it's interesting because for a bank, I guess that you just open up the API, the job is not done, I would assume. Do you have like your own teams that work together with the client to get the whole customer journey right? Or I could imagine that this is definitely a new way to actually approach the market, instead of, you know, sending them to your own web flows and or even to the branch. Now you have your partner that integrates the API and needs to maybe consider a lot of guidelines. How do you start there? Is that like also a very like white glove approach that you really take them by the hand and do it together? Or is this like fully self-service?
Really depends. So most bookkeeping parties are fully capable of integrating our APIs as they wish. However, in relation to our identity services, which is a full suite of services that optimize our partners' customer journeys, there we are looking into what are the opportunities or the ways that we can really help them to integrate our service in the most optimal way, that they really optimize those journeys. I think in relation to embedded lending, it's more of a cooperation on how should this look like, also because you have to comply with regulation and laws, of course. And next to that, we are exploring other type of integration methods. So APIs, we distribute APIs, basically with the idea that partners should or are able to integrate those APIs themselves and offer those in an optimal way in their platforms. However, there may be other types of partners or users for which widgets makes more sense, or other type of integration methods. So there we are looking to. We do not have an implementation. We do have an implementation team, but we do not cooperate with, for example, a fintech who's very good in implementation and optimizing customer journeys.
Yeah, cool. Maybe the last question then. I think you already mentioned a lot of like APIs and infrastructure and portals and widgets. How big of a jump did you have to make, I think, for the account and payment initiation? Of course, that's very much driven by regulation. You have to open your APIs, and that process then obviously has to be implemented accordingly. But for other services, and I know for any large banking group, it's safe to say that the tech is always something that needs to be very carefully managed to make sure you can offer radically new services, which I would assume, you know, embedded finance to be in that category. I'm always wondering, like, do you make this fit into the existing organization and hand over leads there and try to plug it into existing processes, or do you really start greenfield, like a totally new approach, to really as the lead, or let's say the area for banking as a service that runs on its whole own infrastructure and everything? Was that a consideration, or was that even a challenge in the first place for you?
Well, we believe, or what I at least personally believe, is that embedded finance is a true transformation of the financial sector eventually. And therefore we chose a model in which we say product development lies with product development, so with the current product teams that already exist within Rabobank, and they should adopt this new way of developing products, this new way of distributing products, this new way of reaching your customers. And that takes more time than owning a couple of, or having a couple of teams available who start developing APIs. This decentralized model, as we call it, has the benefit that the product knowledge lies where it belongs, and that once those product teams get to know how to develop APIs and what embedded finance truly means for their product and their customer group, that is, well, that they become ready for the future, and that is eventually scalable, because you can imagine we have a huge payments department, we have huge lending departments, huge mortgage departments. Choosing for a centralized model in which we say, well, we do have the knowledge of how to develop APIs, will speed up product development in the short term, but will limit scalability in the long term. So because we believe that embedded finance is here to stay and that it's not necessarily something you can do next to your current way of working, but should be integrated into your organization, we chose this long-term model, so to say, and decentralized product development and change from the inside out.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah, that sounds super interesting. And obviously,
which has its challenges, of course.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. And I guess once you do it in the core, you always will compete against other initiatives and other priorities.
Definitely.
And so on, of course.
Yeah. Yes.
But I agree, it's probably the best if you want to succeed long term. Then it's all really also embedded in your own organization. So it has the right structure already. For the future. Yeah, super interesting. And maybe anything that you're particularly watching or excited about going forward, maybe also outside of the Netherlands in terms of embedded finance, is there anything for the future that you think will be interesting to watch?
I think there are a couple of things that I'm curious about. And first of all, the effects of the new upcoming regulation and what this will do with specifically the smaller banks within the Netherlands. So you see that PSD2 came into force, but it's not super mature yet. So we try to develop products based on PSD2 data, but therefore the PSD2 data should always be available, and we're not there yet. Well, now adding new regulation and asking even more of the financial sector, how will this help to mature the sector, or are we going to see more and more differences? So that's one. Then secondly, we really were, I think as a large institution, were afraid what the effects of PSD2 were going to be. I think now we can safely say that we're indeed partly disrupted in some parts, which I think is a good thing, because we are challenged to improve our customer service and products. However, you see that banks and fintechs are becoming more and more partners and reliant on each other rather than competitors. So I'm curious to see how that will evolve. And then thirdly, how the true banking as a service players will do. So there are a couple of them that chose real BaaS model. And I'm really curious to see how this market will evolve, and also what that will mean for traditional financial institutions.
Yeah, I fully agree. I think the fintechs that really just do banking as a service, and it has been a while that they're on the market, and I think it didn't take off maybe as expected, in that sense that it's not a huge, huge market right away, and many of them are not like hugely profitable now, or like are not big tech platforms. So as a standalone business model, it remains to be seen, maybe especially also in terms of accounts and cards and payments focused banking as a service providers. It's just, you really need to be really, really big to pull this off. And maybe it's also a European question that the market is too fragmented still in these products to scale that quickly. So yeah, that will be interesting for sure to see.
And it will take time. So we tend to overestimate changes in the short term and underestimate changes in the long term. I think this window of opportunity for those type of players will arise, or is there, and it's opening up. But they need time and therefore money to really prove this, because there will be a shift in the customer demand. There will be a turning point in the financial sector. Regulation will stimulate this, but it all has to come together. And you do see it coming together already, but then still before it's really the tipping point and it's really the shift really happened, I think we're a couple of years further away from now.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, but it's interesting to see Rabobank really going down this route and innovating, actually, because I think it really takes a lot of commitment to actually do this and to get the resources and to push be embedded services. But I'm really positive about large banking groups to actually succeed in this, because I think they really have a lot of assets. Maybe if you start out not on the tech side so much, but definitely on the market trust, the relationships, especially with potential customers that fintechs don't have. And it, I think it's that puts them in a good position to pursue this opportunity. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We can leverage this, the trust and the skill we have. But we should be fast enough to keep up with the market speed.
yeah. Okay, the speed is maybe not something too much associated with the large banking groups, but cool. But thanks a lot that you took the time. That was, at least for me, super interesting to see how you approach this whole topic and what kind of products you're focusing on. So it'll be also interesting to see how Rabobank develops this whole space in the Netherlands. I would also tell our listeners, if they are based in the Netherlands and are interested in embedding services, you can of course always visit Rabobank's open banking and embedded finance platform and API platforms and landing pages. We'll link them also in the show notes. And thanks, Jurtje, for taking the time.
Thanks a lot for the invitation.